You've seen the headlines. Bonds are making a comeback. But if you've ever tried to invest in bonds, you know what a clunky, complicated, broken experience it can be. That's why at Public, they took fixed income and fixed it. Now you can find, evaluate, and buy thousands of bonds with an investing experience designed this century. Add fixed income to your portfolio with corporate, treasury, and municipal bonds. Go to public.com/bondspodcast to get started. This podcast is sponsored by Public. Full disclosures can be found at public.com/bonds. Chat with Traders is sponsored by Trade the Pool. Are concerns about limited buying power, insufficient capital, or fear of losing your own money preventing you from advancing your trading capabilities? Trade the Pool is an online stock trading prop firm that offers funding for stock traders. Demonstrate your skills, trade their capital, and keep your profits. You can engage in intraday trading and now swing trading on Trade the Pool with any U.S. stock or ETF. The procedure is straightforward. Pay an evaluation fee, successfully complete the evaluation, and get funded. Visit tradethepool.com/chat to learn more.
Trading in the financial markets involves a risk of loss. Podcast episodes and other content produced by Chat with Traders are for informational or educational purposes only and do not constitute trading or investment recommendations or advice.
You know, I've got some traders who are, they're basically on a leaderboard on that floor and they're chasing each other all day. So they're burning their brain. They're just burning all of their energy. And then when the clock strikes 4 p.m., they leave and then they're immediately at the pub drinking because of the amount of stress that they're incurring. Your brain is either in two modes. It is in survival mode or it's in thrive mode. It's either one or the other.
Markets, speculation, and risk. This is the Chat with Traders podcast.
Welcome to Chat with Traders. I'm Tessa, co-host of the show, and you're listening to episode 256. That awesome Aussie accent you just heard in the preview belongs to Louisa Nicola, our guest today, and we get to hear much more from her shortly. But first, I want to take this opportunity to pause for a minute and thank you for tuning into the show. If you're new to the show, welcome. Because of your listenership, we're able to keep this show going with fresh new episodes about twice a month. Sometimes we're able to squeeze in a third episode. So when was the last time we had an episode that is dedicated to talking about you? Yes, you, namely your brain, your body, your well-being, all this working together. So we're going to take a break from the amazing trading topics that we usually have and instead focus on something that is as equally important, if not more. When it comes to trading, we often focus on that end goal of achieving results and becoming successful, which may mean something different to everyone. And we would put in the hours, blood, sweat, and tears to do whatever it takes to get there. But ironically, we often put ourselves last when it comes to nurturing ourselves, our brains, our bodies, our well-being. And amazingly, some of us can get away with this in the short term. But would we be healthy enough to make trading sustainable long-term? Or do we wait and see, and then it might be too late? Let's reflect on that for a moment. So today, Ian speaks with Louisa Nicola. After an accident that ended her career as a professional triathlete, Louisa continued to live her passion, but in a different way. She became a neurophysiologist and human performance coach in order to understand and share with others what improves and degrades the brain's short-term performance and long-term viability. She's the founder of Neural Athletics. I've dropped off more information on her bio in the show notes. Hopefully, what we will listen to today will stick and get us to think differently and put things in perspective in regards to trading and everything else non-trading related that is super important but often takes a back seat. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, we're so pleased to present Louisa Nicola, all the way from Sydney, Australia.
Well, hello, Louisa. Welcome to Chat with Traders.
Hi, Ian. Thank you so much for having me.
Whereabouts are you from? You sound Australian?
Yes. So I live in New York City, but I am Australian from Sydney, and you've caught me back in Sydney. So it's currently 8 a.m.
Oh, great. Great. Yeah. Well, Louisa, we'd love to hear a little bit about your background. I understand you used to be an athlete.
I did. I have a quite an interesting background. So I was an elite triathlete. I raced for Australia. And that's, you know, whenever somebody says, like, where did you get this thirst for high performance and human performance? I always refer back to that, because a triathlete has to be amazing at three sports: swim, bike, run. So I was an athlete racing for Australia, and then I inevitably went to university and studied exercise science, physiology, and then further on, I went into medicine, which is where I learned everything that I know today.
Mm-hmm. So was there a certain trigger that got you into the field of advising clients?
Yeah. So when I was, you know, when you go and study medicine, you obviously choose a path to go down, like a specialty. And I fell in love with the brain, and I started to understand more about the brain. You know, I was working in a hospital setting, and you know, you start to understand not just pathology, you know, what causes brain diseases, for example, but you learn how the brain functions. And it's interesting because that area of research was only reserved for people who were going into hospital. And I started to learn, and this was about 10 years ago now, I started to learn that, well, every single person has a brain. And what does it mean for a brain to perform well? And so these are the questions I was asking my advisor back, you know, back when I was studying and back when I was working in the hospital setting. And it wasn't until I saw this piece of equipment. So I started using an EEG, which is an electroencephalogram. So that's my main modality of what I was doing. And basically what this is it's this cap that you put on your head, and it has all these leads coming out of it, and it assesses the functionality of the brain. So I was seeing people back then who were coming in with, you know, dysfunctions. They were either, they had epilepsy, or maybe they had early onset Alzheimer's disease. And so when I was looking at these reports, I thought, well, if it's coming up with areas of dysfunction, what if we put it on a brain that's, you know, that doesn't have any disease states, you know, someone who hasn't had epilepsy, or someone who's not has early onset Alzheimer's disease. And I thought, well, imagine what we could do with that report. We could make somebody essentially better. And if we make someone have a better performing brain, that means that maybe they could be more successful. Maybe they could be a better athlete. Maybe they could make more money because their brain would be performing better. So that's how I started, Ian. I thought, well, let's put this EEG cap on an athlete. So that's what I did. I fled Sydney and I went to New York City, and that's where I started my company, NeuroAthletics. And I started working with NFL players, inevitably, because they're the ones that had, you know, concussions at the time. And then I started working with NBA players. And I had this one NBA player who, when he came and saw me, we put the cap on him and I assessed his visual acuity. So I was able to assess how well his eyes were performing. And then I was able to understand how well his brain was performing. And I got him to perform better just by training his brain, by putting him on these protocols to enhance his brain function. And he was able to perform better on the court. So then I ended up taking this into the financial services space. And this is why you and I are talking. I'm going to share a lot of the things I was doing with these people. But I started recruiting a lot of hedge fund and portfolio managers, and I was doing the exact same thing, Ian. I was putting the EEG cap on them. I was picking up on areas of dysfunction, and I was just making them better. And this was in 2018, 2019. And then they would call me up and they're like, Louise, I made a trade today and it's changed my life. So that's how I started.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us an example, a little more detail on what do you look for in the EEG test and what types of dysfunction or abnormalities you might have seen in some of the traders or athletes?
Yeah. So I think you could agree that especially in New York City, you know, you look at some of the guys on Wall Street, what are they doing? This is what I've found. And I hope maybe it's different for some people listening, but, you know, they're going to work, they're getting there at 8 a.m., they're on the clock. You know, I've got some traders who are, they're basically on a leaderboard, right? So at their work, they've got this, you know, they've got their screen and they've got a leaderboard of all of the traders on that floor and they're chasing each other all day. So they're just, they're burning their brain. They're just burning all of their energy. And then when the clock strikes 4 p.m., they leave and then they're immediately at the pub drinking because of the amount of stress that they're incurring. So your brain is either in two modes. It is in survival mode or it's in thrive mode. It's either one or the other. That's how the human brain works. And evolutionarily, your brain isn't designed to survive past the age of reproduction. So evolutionarily, we would be, you know, we pretty much were dying at around 40, 45 because your brain is like, I don't need to survive anymore. So now we know that we can survive to 80, 90, 100, 120. So with that comes a lot of stress for the brain. So your brain is constantly trying to survive. And then when you load it with sleep deprivation, when you load it with alcohol, when you load it with poor food, well, what happens is it starts to deteriorate. And so that's what I was seeing on these brain scans. So this brain scan that we do, it's a 30-minute test. We have you, for half of the time, your eyes are open. So it scans your brain while your eyes are open. Then it scans your brain when your eyes are closed. And basically, we also get you to perform a reaction test and a memory test. So your brain has four lobes. And the frontal lobe, which it's right behind the forehead. So if you put your palm up to your forehead, it's about as big as your palm. And that area there is what I'm really looking at, because that area of your brain, it's not just the biggest and most prominent, it's the part of the brain that houses all of your cognitive functions. So you think about your thinking, your decision making, your processing speed. They all live right there in the frontal lobe. And if you are chronically sleep deprived, if you are dehydrated, if you are having bad food, if your blood work is all over the place, if you've got high cholesterol, it affects that area of the brain. And just like in finance, these bad or poor lifestyle decisions that you make daily, they compound. So when one of my, I had one portfolio manager that I always speak about, he came to see me, he was 49 years old. And when we do one of these scans, it gives you a report. And in that report, it says, this man is around 60 years old. And, you know, it tells you your age based on a normative database. So I had this 49-year-old and he had, I think he had around $5 billion under assets, asset management. And he was just burning himself to the ground. He had two kids. He was eating poorly. He was drinking because he couldn't handle himself. He was stressed. And this was compounding every year. And he had been, I think he was in the game from the age of 25. So he was 49 and his brain looked 69 on the scan. So that's the sort of things that we can find out.
Mm-hmm. Some traders might argue that, some sacrifices in health and other areas is normal. And they expect that because to, you know, be successful, they got to devote all their time and energy toward trading. And you know, once they get successful, then later on they can get back to a healthy diet and healthy habits. How would you respond to that?
Yeah, I see that, right? It's like that adrenaline hit. You know how some people say, well, Louisa, I mean, I feel fine after 5 hours of sleep. When we now have clinical data to show that 5 hours is detrimental to your brain, you're basically running on adrenaline. Right. It's good. It can last for 6 months if these traders are acting this way. They've got to put in the hard work. And while that is true, you always have to think about what does this mean to me in 10 years? What does this mean to me in 20 years? Because I have to tell you right now that currently worldwide, we have an epidemic of Alzheimer's disease. We have 50 million people worldwide currently that have Alzheimer's disease, and that number is said to triple by the year 2050. Now, Alzheimer's disease isn't a timestamp. It's not just a one-time, insult that occurs at the age of 75 or 80. You don't just go to the doctor and he says, well, yeah, you've got Alzheimer's disease. It actually starts in your 30s. So that's what I have to say to the people who say to me, but Louisa, I need to be sleep deprived. I need to be working this hard. I need to be having this so I can make the money. It's like, well, okay, but what are you going to do when you're 60, 65, 70, and you start to lose your memory? That's the first thing that goes. What are you going to do when you are angry or you have a short fuse or you just can't manage stress or your lipids are just out of control? What are you going to do then? That's what mm-hmm. I have to say.
Right. Well, speaking of sleep, sleep is one of the areas that you emphasize quite a lot. And I believe I've heard you say in a previous interview about preparing for sleep from the moment you wake up. Could you go into that a little bit?
Yeah. Look, sleep is the most underrated high performance tool that we have. If you are not looking after your sleep, if you are not, I say, training for sleep, then you're doing yourself a disservice. And you're preparing for sleep the moment that you wake up, because we have this natural 24-hour clock, the circadian rhythm that occurs. So inevitably, our brain knows that when the sun comes up, we are meant to be awake. And when the sun goes down, we're meant to go to sleep. And a really amazing thing happens when the sun goes down. Basically, your brain starts to prime itself for sleep. It starts to say, well, it's getting dark, so I'm going to release a little bit of melatonin. And melatonin, which many people have heard of, it's a naturally occurring hormone, and it gets released in response to darkness. So when this happens, it basically prepares our brain for sleep so then we can get into sleep. Now, the ideal time of going to sleep is around 10 p.m. and then sleeping, if you can, straight through until 6 a.m. That's like the golden hours, I believe. And that's because sleeping 8 hours at 10 p.m. till 6 a.m. is completely different than sleeping 8 hours at, like, let's say 1 a.m. till 9 a.m. Your brain just doesn't get the nourishment that it needs during those hours. So in order to fall asleep at 10 p.m. or even 9:30 p.m., you have to be preparing yourself the morning before, because if you sleep until 9 a.m. in the morning, which many people listening to this probably don't, but let's say you do, maybe on a weekend, it messes up that circadian rhythm, right? You might not feel tired until midnight the following night. So it's really important that you prepare for sleep first thing in the morning. And, you know, that involves knowing when your last meal is. That involves withholding from coffee at 2 or 3 p.m. That involves withstanding from alcohol at night, because alcohol is really detrimental to your sleep. It actually doesn't allow you to get into sleep. It sedates you. It stops you from going into sleep. So these factors are really important. Even exercise, you know, a lot of my clients, I'm begging them to exercise in the mornings, and they really like to exercise at night. And, you know, we've seen that that can somewhat be detrimental to your sleep as well, because it keeps you awake. You know, you secrete a lot of cortisol when you exercise. It stresses you out, which it should be. It makes you excited and keeps you awake. So if you're doing that at night, it's going to stop you from falling asleep.
You've seen the headlines. Bonds are making a comeback. But if you've ever tried to invest in bonds, you know what a clunky, complicated, broken experience it can be. That's why at Public, they took fixed income and fixed it. Now you can find, evaluate, and buy thousands of bonds with an investing experience designed this century. They started at the beginning, reimagining the bond screener with an intuitive design that helps you zero in on the exact kinds of bonds you're looking for. Then They made it easier to evaluate each investment opportunity with better data in the places you need it most. Finally, they made investing in bonds as straightforward as stocks or any other asset. Add fixed income to your portfolio with corporate, treasury, and municipal bonds. Go to public.com/bondspodcast to get started. This podcast is sponsored by Public. Full disclosures can be found at public.com/bonds.
Are you a developing or seasoned day trader who trades the U.S. markets? Is the only thing stopping you from getting to the next level is having enough capital to trade? Trade the Pool is a unique online stock trading prop firm that funds stock traders worldwide. Not having to risk your own capital can help you focus on other things like making better decisions on your trades. There's no PDT rules to worry about. You got more than 12,000 stocks and ETFs to trade, long or short, and professional tools at your side. How you get funded is you show them your skills through a straightforward evaluation process. Once you pass the evaluation, you get funded and trade with their pool of money and split the profits. Don't let the lack of buying power, capital, or fear of losing your own money prevent you from taking your trading to the next level. Visit tradethepool.com/chat to learn more.
Mm-hmm. You've mentioned in the past about the importance of getting sunlight. For traders who live in cloudy areas, like here in Seattle, we have a lot of clouds during the wintertime, and often many days can go by without ever seeing the sun. Are you familiar with red light therapy and its potential benefits?
Well, yes, I am. And I feel for these people who don't get a lot of sunlight. Look, I'm no stranger to that. I live in New York City and I suffer, I say, because sunlight is rare. It only really occurs three months out of the year. Now, red light is different. So let's just look at light. Okay. So sunlight is very good for waking up your brain. And that's because when you go out and you see sunlight for the first time in the morning, that basically tells your brain that you're awake. And if you are lacking that sunlight, one of the best things that you can be doing is you can get this light box. I got it off Amazon. I think it was around $24. And it actually mimics the type of light that you see in the sun. It's a 10,000 lux light box. And lux is just a measurement, a wavelength of sunlight. And so what I do is I get this light box, especially in winter in New York, and I put it on, and that's what activates my circadian rhythm. So you need the activation of your circadian rhythm through sunlight. And sadly, what many people are doing is they're leaving their apartment or their house and they're not getting any sunlight, and then they're going straight to the office. So they're basically relying on whatever artificial light is around them to wake them up, or they're relying on stress to wake them up. And it turns out, and I always, you know, people always message me and get mad at this statement, but it turns out that our brains really need at least 3 hours a day of sunlight, which is really hard to get.
Mm-hmm. So you find this type of light box is a decent substitute for when no sunlight is available.
Yeah, that's correct. And you mentioned red light, and that's a completely different light. You know, red light is actually great for calming down your nervous system. And we're just in the early stages now of looking at studies of repairing the brain and repairing the body of pain and strokes using red light therapy. That's why when you go into an infrared sauna, you'll see that it's covered in red lights because it's very calming. So red light is not the same light as I'm talking about when I talk about getting 10,000 lux of natural sunlight.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You've mentioned in previously about the importance of sleep hygiene. What is that?
Yeah. So sleep hygiene. So let's talk about sleep, because I truly believe that anybody listening to this can dramatically improve their trading performance and improve every aspect of their life if they're just sleeping well. So let's talk about like some sleep hygiene facts. And I'm also going to talk, I'm just going to take you through what sleep is. So we cycle through four stages of sleep. So stage one is when we're falling asleep. Stage two is when we're in light sleep. Stage three is deep sleep. So this is the stage that is really important, because stage three deep sleep means that we are getting hormone secretion. So this is when all of your testosterone and estrogen, for the ladies listening, is released. This is where we get the growth and repair of muscle tissue, because we have the release of growth hormone. But another amazing thing happens. We also have this clearing system that happens in our brain. It's called the glymphatic system. So when we go into deep sleep, your brain essentially washes itself. So during the day, you build up toxins, and everyone does, you know, through stress, through environmental factors, we build up these toxins in our brain. And during sleep, it's like very in tune with Mother Nature. During deep sleep, your brain washes itself. So all of the fluid, cerebral spinal fluid, gets washed through your brain like a washing machine or a sewage system, and it clears out all of the debris. So if you're not sleeping and you're not getting into deep sleep, you're not clearing out these proteins. So that's deep sleep. Then we move into REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep. And this is stage four sleep. And this is the stage where you get all of your memory consolidation. And it's also emotional first aid. So actually, I've got a question for you, Ian. Do you ever see traders who've got a short fuse and they're angry sometimes?
Yes. Well, that's the stereotype of the trader who breaks his computer keyboard and while trading. Yeah.
And it's not just on the movies, because it actually happens. And when you're a bit angry, when you show this type of emotion, it in a bad way, because like you can have like a fired up emotion, which can serve you well. But when you're really angry, it interferes with so many different aspects of your trading, in terms of performance, in terms of how well you're speaking, communicating to your colleagues, and ultimately the decision to trade or hold. So REM sleep is emotional first aid. You are more, if you're having really bad REM sleep, you're definitely not going to be managing your emotions well the next day. So we're cycling through these four stages of sleep throughout the night. But sadly, if we have alcohol, for example, alcohol completely plummets your REM sleep. So just because you're quote unquote asleep, you're not actually reaching deep sleep or REM sleep. So you could just be cold, out cold, sedated for the night without getting into these deep sleep stages. So some good common practices for sleep hygiene include eliminating alcohol. It includes sleeping in a pitch black room. So having any type of light that comes into the room can disrupt your sleep. So making sure that you're sleeping in a pitch black room, a cool room. So we know that in order to fall asleep and stay asleep, our core body temperature needs to drop at least 2 degrees. So making sure that you're not really hot. You know, right now it's March 17th in Australia, and it's really hot. It's actually, I mean, Fahrenheit wise, I think it hit 100 degrees Fahrenheit, maybe 104, if I've got that correct. And it's really hot at night. So I sleep with the air conditioner on. I also sleep on a temperature controlled mattress. So making sure that you're not warm at night can help you with sleep. And then there's other things like practicing calming techniques, so you calm down your mind before you fall asleep. And this is all to ensure that you are getting into the deep sleep and getting into REM sleep.
Mm-hmm. I have a wearable on my, I have a type of watch that measures my sleep. And I've noticed that sometimes it will tell me the next morning that I actually got too much REM sleep. Is there such a thing as too much REM or even too much sleep in general?
So yes and no. So getting too much sleep, it's very hard to do, because first of all, let's look at the opposite of that. Your sleep isn't like debt that you can repay at the bank. So if you sleep 5 hours a night during the week and think that you can just make up for it on the weekend, you can't. If you've lost one, if you had one night of bad sleep, that's it. You've had a night of bad sleep. You can't make up for it. Now, inversely, if you're having too much sleep each night, you know, you may feel lethargic, but it's not as bad as getting, you know, not enough sleep. But can I ask, what type of wearable do you have?
I have the Garmin Fenix, I think G7 watch. It's an athletic watch.
Yeah, I have a Garmin too. So I have an Oura Ring, which is the most, which is probably the best one to be tracking your sleep. I also have a Garmin. I don't use it for sleep. I use it for training. So one thing to remember about these wearables are they're never going to mimic a sleep study. You know, when you go and have a sleep study, you're hooked up to many leads, ECG leads, you've got EEG leads, you've got leads on your eyes to really pick up on sleep patterns. So you're generally thinking, okay, well, you may be looking at around an 85% accuracy with these wearables. But with yours, I have to say that you're probably looking maybe at like a 60, not even a 60% accuracy. So I would rather put you on a better performing wearable to check that. But what's the what REM sleep are you getting?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it varies each night, and I admit that the accuracy does seem to vary quite a bit, because sometimes it will say that my sleep was poor, even though I had 8 hours of sleep, and I feel pretty good. So how I feel doesn't jive very well with what the watch actually reports. So I'm a little confused on how it collects the data and, you know, what devices are accurate that are that the typical consumer can buy and use themselves.
Yeah. And so what you're generally, if people are wearing maybe a Whoop strap or an Oura Ring, you generally want to look for having a REM sleep score of 20% of your total sleep time. And more often than not, people just need to increase their total sleep time. You know, that means that even if you increase your sleep from 7 hours to 8 hours, that's probably going to increase the amount of time spent in deep sleep and in REM sleep. And then REM should be, your deep sleep should be much higher than your REM sleep as well.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts about other aids, sleep aids? For example, before bed, I use blue light blocking glasses, which I have found to be effective myself in helping to create a sleepy state while I'm looking at the computer screen. Also, other ones, PEMF devices, which are called pulsed electromagnetic field devices, and CBD. Any of those have you used, or any opinions on that?
Yeah, I've got an opinion on the blue light blocking glasses because I actually wear them as well. However, sometimes it may just be a placebo, because so when you're awake all day, your eyes get weaker. Okay. So they've been open all day. They're getting so many different aspects of light, all different rays, and you're seeing so many different things. So at night, they're more susceptible to light. So whether you're wearing blue light blocking glasses or not, you're still telling your brain that you're awake, because your brain stays awake and is told that we're awake through light that comes into the eyes, because your eyes are connected to your brain through the optic nerve. So no matter how much you shield them with the blue light blocking glasses, there is still light that is seeping in. So but then there's also that placebo effect. So it may help you in a small way. So if it works for you, then definitely. But the CBD oil, you know, many people have different things. So I use, I supplement with GABA, gamma amino butyric acid. It's our chief inhibitory neurotransmitter, meaning that we have different chemicals, the neurotransmitters that get circulated through the brain, and they're responsible for keeping us alert, awake, happy, sad. And this neurotransmitter, GABA, it's involved in calming us down because it inhibits, it stops synapses, which are the two brain cells that, you know, form a chemical message. So it stops them and basically it calms you down throughout the night. So I have that before I go to sleep. But Many people use CBD. If that makes you feel good, if that calms you down, then that is great. You know, we actually don't speak about the placebo effect enough. So whether that calms you down or whether it's a, you know, really happening or whether it's placebo, then I say keep doing it.
Mm-hmm. What about when should we finish our last meal of the day? And how many hours should we allow from the last meal to when we go to sleep?
Yeah. So it takes your body an hour and a half, 90 minutes for peristalsis to finish. That's like when your body digests itself. So when you digest all of the food that occurs. And the general rule is you want to have a 2-hour window from the moment that you stop eating to the moment that you fall asleep. You never want to fall asleep on a full stomach, A, but you also want to digest the food before you go into sleep. So if you want to be in bed asleep by 10 p.m., I would say have your last meal by 8 p.m. And that doesn't include any supplementation. Supplementation should occur 20 minutes before you want to go to sleep. So having your last meal at that time would most likely be best. And then it's also, what are you doing? You mentioned, Ian, that you're on a computer at night. That's probably not the best thing for you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But many people are, you know, many people are, I've got a lot of clients who, I've got this one, he's amazing. He travels a lot. He is a portfolio manager and investor. He travels from Miami to New York quite regularly. And he, when we go through his day, he's like, you know, I stop the clock at 4 p.m. and, you know, I go home to my wife and my kids and then I put the kids to sleep and then I'm back on my computer until midnight. And I'm like, wait, what? And I'm trying to get him to stop that. But it's very hard, I understand, for some people. But it's probably not serving you in any way. A, it's keeping you up. B, you're looking at light. And C, you're just not giving your brain the time to get into sleep and repair itself.
Mm-hmm. I've read that the brain loves habits. So I've heard that it is a good idea to go to bed at the same time every day. And like you said earlier, prepare for sleep from the moment you wake up. And one way to do that perhaps is to establish habits. From my understanding, habits are a way for the brain to simplify things and where it doesn't have to use as much energy thinking about it because it's kind of automatic. Do you have viewpoints about that?
Yeah, your brain does love habits. You know, if your brain was ruling everything, it would wake up at the same time every day, have the exact same meal every day, and go to sleep at the same time every day. And that, again, is purely because of the circadian rhythm. So the more habits that you can instill in your brain and the more consistency, I should say, the better your brain will perform. Now, we're not robots, right? So if you had to have any aspect of your life that was consistent, I would say sleep would be the number one thing. Making sure that you're waking up and going to sleep every night should be the most consistent thing. But then in terms of habits, your brain is very malleable. You know, we call it plastic for a reason, because something that is really profound to us humans is our ability to introduce or induce neuroplasticity, which is basically how your brain forms habits. You know, it basically says when one neuron fires, the other one fires. So meaning that the more times, let's just imagine your brain as all of these interconnected highways. You know, there's a really great analogy. I think it's of these highways in Dubai. They take a helicopter view of these highways and you just see them and they just look amazing. They're going in all different directions. So let's just imagine you've got, you know, millions of highways in your brain. And the more times that you travel down this highway, that highway gets thicker and it gets stronger. And so every time you travel down it, it just gets easier and easier and easier, and you're just gliding down it. That's pretty much what neuroplasticity is. So the more times that you do the same thing over and over again, whether it's something bad or whether it's something good, it turns into a habit. And this is why, you know, this is why things such as, you know, bad habits occur, because it's just a natural thing. You know, a bad habit may be like, you know, biting your nails. The more times you do it, the more times you're going to create that habit. And that's why habits are hard to stop. But if you can write down some of the habits that you want to instill in yourself, it may be, I want to get up every morning and work out. It may just be suffering for the first 2 weeks and making sure that you get up at 5:30 a.m. or 6 a.m. every morning and then just keep doing that habit. It gets easier and easier because your brain just becomes natural at doing it.
Mm-hmm. Great. I'd like to transition to the next very important area for people to focus on, and which is exercise. Do you know of the different types of exercise and its impact? Like how does weightlifting compare to, say, cardio, walking, yoga? How do those different types of exercise impact us?
Yeah, exercise is one of the pillars of human performance, especially at neuroathletics. If you want a well-performing brain, you should be exercising. And that's because, first and foremost, your brain is very vascular rich. It's filled with blood vessels and capillaries and veins and arteries. And this is what delivers through blood. This is what delivers oxygen and nutrients to your brain. The one thing that you need to survive, oxygen and nutrients. So when you're exercising, whether it's aerobic activity, physical activity, or whether it's strength training, you're getting more blood flow to your brain. And we know that we should be doing at minimum 20 minutes of exercise per day. And that allows for good blood flow to the brain. What happens is, over time, your brain begins to atrophy. At the age of 30, your brain begins to deteriorate. And one of the first things that goes is this area in the brain called the hippocampus. And this is, you know, used for memory formation and consolidation. It's like a seahorse-shaped structure deep within the temporal lobes of your brain. That tends to go first. You know, we start to forget things, especially short-term memory. One of the best ways of preserving your hippocampal volume and the amount of cells within the hippocampus is actually through exercise. So when you do any form of exercise, let's just say we're going out, we're going to go for a run, or you're getting your heart beating at around 65 to 70% of your maximum heart rate, you're releasing a lot of hormones. And one of the hormones that you release is a growth factor for the brain. It's called brain-derived neurotrophic factor. And what that does is, when it goes into the brain, it actually goes into the hippocampus and it helps with the proliferation of new cells, neurons within the hippocampus. So through exercise, you're preserving the hippocampal volume. So you're getting that from it. So you're helping with your memory. You're also helping with the way that your brain is structured. So likewise, when we do weight training, for example, we actually release many more hormones than what we do when we are doing aerobic exercise. And that's actually my area of research. I research the effects of resistance training on the brain. And I've got to tell you, Ian, it's absolutely monumental. You know, I look at MRI scans of people who are, you know, not exercising compared to people who are exercising. And the difference between these two people, especially strength training, is the thickness of their brain. So you've got gray matter, which is the outer layer of your brain. Then you've got white matter, and that's the inside of your brain. And both areas are just exponentially better in the people who are doing any form of resistance training. So I just want to make sure that weight training and resistance training, I want everyone to know that they're pretty much the same thing. They are the same thing. So any form of resistance that you incur on your skeletal muscle. So weight training is extremely imperative. It doesn't just help you with the way your brain is structured and the way it functions. It actually helps you throughout the lifespan, because one of the worst things that can increase your mortality at the age of, let's say, around 80 is if you fall and break a hip. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And so one of the best ways to preserve that is through weight training, because you obviously strengthen your leg muscles and your hip muscles.
Mm-hmm. So would you say for people who are severely time constrained, does weight training offer the best bang for the buck of the different types of exercise?
If I was purely a neurophysiologist, I would say just do the weight training. But then there's an aspect of cardiac remodeling that needs to be addressed. And I know I feel like I don't want people to just stop listening to this because I'm going too sciencey, but you should listen because we all have a heart and we all have a brain. Your heart, it should be strong. You know, it's like, it's a muscle, just like your body, your heart also needs to be worked out. So every time you work it out through aerobic training, we train the muscles and the ventricles of our heart so it can be stronger. So the big, you know, there's just, I can't answer that question and say which is better in terms of bang for your buck. I'm going to have to, you know, just be the villain here and say you need to be doing both.
Do you place much credence in some of the wearables and their ability to measure what's called heart rate variability?
Oh, yes. Heart rate variability is amazing. You know, it's a measure of your recovery. You know, it's funny that you say that because my heart rate variability lately is plummeting. And I think it's because of the amount of traveling I'm doing. Heart rate variability is amazing. For me, I'm able to track my clients on the back end and I check their heart rate variability. And I'm like, hey, listen, why is your HRV lower than what it was 2 weeks ago or a week ago? So I'm able to assess what these people are not doing right. And stress is really, really important for increasing or decreasing your heart rate variability. So you always want to be trying your very best to increase your heart rate variability. And I think when it comes to wearables, it's probably the best, most accurate thing that you can get from one of these things.
Mm-hmm. So you would recommend minimum of 20 minutes a day. Is that correct? Of exercise and how often, like how many days per week do a lot of exercise, say on just 1 or 2 days a week, instead of spreading it out?
No. So what you want to do is you want to aim for at least 3 days a week of weight training. So 3 days a week of performing, you know, weights. And I would, for the people who are like, I don't have that much time, just aim for compound movements, not the little accessory muscles. Like don't just do, you know, deltoids, just do your entire body. Try at lifting weights at around 70% of your one repetition max. So if you've ever, you know, if you've done weight training and you've ever had a trainer, maybe the first thing that they're going to do is they're going to test what your one RM is. So that's the biggest amount of weight that you can do with one rep. So let's just say that your one RM for a squat is 100 kilos. Then when you go and do weights and you're doing squats, you want to make sure that you're doing 70 kilos. And you're doing it for around 6 reps. So that's the general rule. So weight training 3 days a week and then 20 minutes of cardio in the day, every other day.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when we go to the gym, we first test out what's the maximum we can do one time. And then we take 70% of that and have that as our aim to do repetitively throughout the days and weeks. Is that correct? Until we get stronger and then maybe we increase that over time.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And please make sure you're warming up before you do that one RM or make sure you're doing it with a qualified professional mm-hmm. so you don't hurt yourself.
Excuse the last interruption here. This is Tessa. We hope you're enjoying this episode so far. If you love the podcast, please give Chat with Traders the best review you can on whatever platform you're listening from. This will help us to keep the episodes coming. Also, if you haven't subscribed to our email list, please hop on to chatwithtraders.com and click on subscribe so we can keep you posted of information that may be of importance. Thank you. Now back to the chat with our guest.
Right. Great. I'd like to jump into diet and its effects. So what is, how does diet affect brain performance? And should we start the day with water or coffee?
Well, you know, you can start the day with honestly whatever you like. If it's water, if it's coffee, then that's fine. I don't have a, you know, there's no real clinical evidence to show that if you have coffee first thing in the morning, it's going to hurt you in any way. The only thing, you just need to make sure you don't have any coffee after 2 or 3 p.m. in the afternoon. But when it comes to, you know, the most controversial topic ever in science is nutrition, right? There's always going to be the people who say that you've got to have the carnivore diet or the plant-based diet. But when it comes to a well-performing brain, what we know is that lots of vegetables and fiber and fruits and fish is fantastic for the brain. I have everything. I have fruits, vegetables, red meat, white meat, and fish. So I have everything. And one of the best known diets for the brain is actually the MIND diet. So Mediterranean Intervention Dash diet. So this involves having around 70% of your diet that is made from fruits and vegetables, and then having a little bit of fish and a little bit of red meat, and of course, legumes as well. So instead of talking about, you know, what's the best diet, let's talk about two nutrients or two supplements that I think that we should all be having. The number one supplement that I think everybody should be having is creatine. And you probably have heard of creatine because it's the most widely studied supplement on the market. It's also the cheapest and it's also the safest. And we used to think of creatine as something that was just good for the body, but we now have evidence to show that creatine is not just good for the body, but it's also good for the brain. It's also imperative for the brain. So we all have creatine stores naturally occurring in our body and brain already, but they deteriorate, and creatine is involved in cell energy metabolism. So it helps with giving you more energy and producing more energy. And so if you can supplement with creatine 5 grams a day, you will see a massive difference in your performance. In fact, I even get my father, he's 71. He had a stroke 2 years ago. So I have him supplementing with creatine as well. So creatine is amazing. And then the second thing on that is omega-3 fatty acids, which come from fatty fish. So specifically, when you look at these omega-3 fatty acids, they're broken into three parts: EPA, DHA, and ALA. And it turns out that EPA and DHA, they are really important for the brain, especially DHA, because they go into the brain and they can actually help you with cell membrane fluidity. So it, you know, penetrates the cell of the brains, the brain cells, and it helps them become more fluid. It also helps with regeneration and repair, and it also helps with ameliorating some of the bad toxins that build up during the day.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of supplements, are there ways to enhance absorption, and are there any best times to take it? Because I've heard that some people say that much of the supplements that people take, you know, end up getting, you know, discharged when you go to the bathroom, and a lot of them don't get absorbed. So what are the key issues to search for in supplements, and which ones to take?
You're never going to get 100% bioavailability, because you just never, not from anything, because we are humans. That's just the way we operate. So in terms of absorption, look, I mean, it's so interesting because this is how marketing companies are marketing IV fluids. to people, which is just, there's no real scientific efficacy of having an IV full of like vitamins and minerals as opposed to just, you know, getting them through a diet. So I wouldn't worry about that. I wouldn't worry about, oh, am I just creating expensive urine? I would worry about quality and safety of supplements. So because supplements are not regulated by the FDA, they are very, it's an unregulated industry. And this means that companies can just go and put whatever they want in a supplement and call it a supplement. So this is why I'm actually an advisor for Momentous Supplements. And I am because they are a company that are triple certified. So you know that the safety and quality of their supplements are very, very good, as opposed to getting a supplement on the internet from a brand that you don't know because it could contain probably things, you know, rancid things that you don't want it to contain. So I think you should stick to quality of brand over thinking, am I absorbing these supplements?
Mm-hmm. You mentioned omega-3 oils or fatty acids. Commonly found in so many foods today are omega-6s, which is commonly found in vegetable oils. Now, I've heard that vegetable oils are the new smoking. Do you have any viewpoints on vegetable oils? Because they seem to be found in just about everything.
Yeah. I mean, look, you look at anything that is packaged and it will most definitely have canola oil in it. There is a huge uproar of people on social media talking about rancid seed oils. Seed oils are bad. Seed oils are going to kill you. Seed oils lead to atherosclerosis. But when you actually look at the cardiology research, it actually doesn't say that at all. It says that seed oils can be cardioprotective. Now, that doesn't mean you should be going and drinking a bottle of canola oil. It is not as good as olive oil. You know, olive oil is incredible for you, but it's not as bad as what social media is portraying with anything, right? I think it's just more of a marketing thing. But what that means is what we know. Just don't fill your diet with crap, you know, packaged things. Fill it with fresh fruits, fresh vegetables, and meat. And if you do happen to have, you know, seed oils, which is inevitable because we're all humans, we go out and eat. When you go and eat out, you're generally having seed oils. I don't think that people, you know, at restaurants really care to cook in olive oil, right? Because it's more expensive. So you're getting it there. But, you know, that doesn't mean that you should not go out at all. You know, it's just not, you know, I've got this, there's just so many people spreading nonsense on social media these days. And it's a fear tactic. You know, people, they're just trying to scare people.
Yes. So when people cook at home, is there any science to avoiding turning up the heat too much when cooking things with oil? Does heat destroy the structure of the oil and make it worse off for one's health?
Yeah, it does. And this is why instead of cooking, you know, if I'm going to cook something really hot, I will use ghee because it's much more better when it's oxidized at that, you know, it doesn't get oxidized like olive oil does. So I will generally, you know, if I want to have a really, really hot dish, I'll use ghee or something like that. And I will use olive oil for something that, you know, doesn't need to be cooked at that level. Again, I think we're getting too much in the weeds of, you know, what is bad for us instead of thinking, well, what am I not including in my diet? You know, many people listening probably aren't even having the micronutrients. We're having the macronutrients, you know, which are the fats, the proteins, and the carbohydrates. But what about the micronutrients? Are you having enough green leafy vegetables? Are you having enough antioxidants from berries and from fruits? That's what you should be thinking of.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that you prefer to focus in on the healthy foods more than focusing in on trying to avoid every bad thing that one can find.
Absolutely. And then Also on that, one of the questions I'm get asked often is sugar going to kill you? Look, we all know that sugar isn't the best thing for you, especially refined sugar, okay? Because we've got, you know, different types of sugar, but the refined sugars that you see in candy and in chocolate, no, they're not good for your brain. You know, just like I say that no amount of alcohol is good for your brain, you know, sugar, refined sugar can also increase inflammatory biomarkers in your brain. So when you get stressed, you release these inflammatory molecules, and that's not good through, you know, that's not good for you, especially at a chronic state. So staying away from, you know, really refined sugars is much better for you as well. And I don't know if you're keeping up with the obesity research right now. It's a huge topic because of Ozempic, which is the obesity drug that's now approved. And I feel like almost everybody's having, you know, Ozempic. I do believe that there is a very strong correlation between the rates of obesity across America and our diets. So almost everything that you see now in a packaged good is filled with sugar. And that's, you know, that's just becoming, you know, you just have to become aware with the fact that if you do have a candy bar, it's filled with refined sugar. So that's what we need to be aware of.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever used continuous glucose monitors, these monitors that attach to the side of your arm, and it measures live, like the effect yeah. of every food that you intake and exercise on your glucose levels?
I have. It was quite interesting. I wore one for like, you know, 3 months. I'm not a diabetic. You know, you used to only wear these for diabetes purposes, but now we know that we can optimize our glucose levels with wearing one of these things. And so what was interesting for me is you find out how different foods affect you. So something that affects me and drives my glucose up and like a huge spike are grapes. Isn't that interesting? Red grapes, green grapes. I would get it and my heart would go ballistic and my glucose would just shoot through the roof. So I learned that about myself. And so I don't wear one now because I think I've learned what my body entails, but I think it's a real great thing for anybody who wants to optimize their glucose and their diet.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned something personal, like how these grapes would personally affect you. How important do you think it is for one to get tested, individually tested, as instead of just saying, well, I've heard the ketogenic diet is good, or I've heard the paleo diet is good, so I just think I'll adopt that diet without knowing their specific situation?
Well, I think the best thing that you can do is before you include anything in your diet, actually get a blood test. So there's some really great, you know, that's what we do with every one of our clients that comes on board. We make them have a blood test and we can actually test what are you deficient in and what aren't you? And then we can optimize from there.
Mm-hmm. So in summary, by making changes in these three areas, sleep, exercise, and diet, can we get a better sense of well-being?
Yes, you 100% can. Because when you think about well-being, I often refer to it as your three pillars: sleep, exercise, and nutrition. So if you can get any type of lab test for these three things, you can obviously optimize your well-being from it.
Mm-hmm. So wrapping up, do you find it challenging doing traveling? I mean, are you traveling right now between Sydney and the States?
Do I find it? I travel for work. I travel throughout America. Yes. Thankfully, I treat the plane like my office. So when I get on, I have Wi-Fi and, you know, I'm able to do a lot of work. Unfortunately, I don't sleep on planes, and that's the number one thing that gets to me. So that's the only thing about traveling that I don't like.
Mm-hmm. What subject areas do you currently spend the most time studying?
So I am currently researching the effects of resistance training on the brain. So I spend most of my time researching that area. And then I have 20 to 25 one-on-one clients that span from professional athletes to day traders and portfolio managers. So I'm generally just constantly looking at over their blood work, over their scans, and just consulting with them on a daily basis.
Do your clients find it difficult to maintain, you know, these habits? Do you have strategies for them to be able to carry this forward going, you know, months and years afterwards?
Yeah, look, nobody is a, every time a client comes to me, they're really coming for around 3 to 4 months, and then I let them go and run free in the wild. And we generally get everything sorted within those 4 months so they can go out and instill those behaviors. And I still get, you know, testimonials from clients that come back 6-7 months later. They're like, Louisa, I now am just realizing how important it is to do the protocol that you put in place for me for sleep. You know, I hear about it like 6, 7, 8 months later.
I found this interesting quote by James Clear, who writes the book Atomic Habits. And the quote is, focus starts with elimination, improves with concentration, and compounds with continuation.
Oh, yeah. That's incredible. I'm going to have to write that one down.
Well, Louisa, thank you for coming on Chat with Traders.
Ian, thank you so much for having me. It's been a blast.
Yeah. How can our listeners get in touch with you?
So you can head on over to my website, which is neuroathletics, N-E-U-R-O, athletics, all one word, .com.au. And there's so many things on there. If you want to speak to somebody on my team, you can. If you want to fill out a form, you can. Maybe we can work together. Or if you just want to listen to my voice, this amazing Australian voice, you can listen to our podcast, The Neuro Experience.
Okay, great. Fantastic. Well, thanks, Louisa.
Thank you.
You've reached the end of this episode of Chat with Traders. But rest assured, there are more episodes loaded with real market insight and zero hype on the way soon. So to stay updated with each great new release, subscribe to the podcast in iTunes, and we'd love it if you'd leave a rating and review. We'll catch you next time on Chat with Traders.